So, we know that the mind is at the heart of yoga. The mind is a living power that's self-aware, the essence of our creative intelligence. The mind is a unique field of energy and a conduit of consciousness, a gateway to experience our inner world. That's the context of how yoga sees the mind. The word mind is limiting, so let's use a Sanskrit term to define this reality, everything which I just described. That mind is chitta. Chitta is this living reality that contains all of our physical awareness, contains our capacity to experience the world outside, and it contains our inner world. All of this is the mind of yoga, which is known as chitta. One very important thing to keep in mind about chitta is that we'll be studying various aspects of chitta, of the mind. But they're not like organs. They're not distinct sections. Chitta is a unique, indivisible, living reality. And all of the different capacities of the mind are integral to chitta. It's no different than when we study the body. If the body is dead, it's a cadaver, we're able to dissect it and pinpoint different organs that perform unique functions. But all of them together, when they're alive, form the body. In a similar way, all of the mind is an integral reality. All of these different capacities work together. For the sake of study, we'll look at them individually, but they're completely commingled. The only distinction is that certain aspects of the mind are more external, the interface with the outside world. And certain aspects of the mind are much more internal, they're more subtle. They are more closely linked to our source, to that consciousness which is at the very heart of our being. That's the only distinction. None of the aspects of the mind are more important or less important because they all have to work together. We will place emphasis in yoga practice on engaging with or awakening certain unique capacities of the mind. But it doesn't mean that the rest of them are less important. For without them, our experience of the world and our experience of ourself wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be as rich or real. So it's important to cultivate an attitude of respect towards chitta, so that we don't feel that certain parts of the mind are lower, are inferior, and aren't in need of our love and attention and nourishment. All of the mind needs to be nourished together. We simply need to look for the right thing in the right place. And that's where a comprehensive understanding of the mind and where certain capacities reside and what we should expect from them is so important. So chitta is the totality of the mind. And this totality of the mind really encompasses our full potential. The aspect of the mind that we're most familiar with is that portion of the mind which is engaged with the world. Yoga calls this the 10 senses. The first 5 senses we're very familiar with. Yoga calls them the cognitive senses, the senses of knowledge: seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, and hearing. These 5 capacities of the mind allow us to perceive the world outside of us. And that's the primary way that these senses of cognition are engaged. They define how we experience the world. And amazingly, that experience of the world is an extremely powerful way that we define ourselves. We never really think about how we see, smell, taste, touch, and hear ourselves. But it's almost like whatever we understand ourselves to be is reflected in the world. And that reflection returns to us in an experience of seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, and hearing. So these 5 senses of knowledge are extremely rich in their capacity to create experience. They define how we understand the world. And yet there's more. But for now, and in large part, these 5 senses are the only way that we can understand the world and ourselves, which is why they're the right place to begin. It's literally how we define reality. This is real. And if we can't see, smell, taste, touch, or hear it, it's not real. As we've already begun walking on the path of yoga, it's quite possible, quite likely, that we've already begun to stretch our understanding, and we're beginning to feel that there might be something more to reality than what we can see, smell, taste, touch, and hear. That's the gateway to looking at deeper capacities of perception. But before we go there, I said that there are 10 senses, the 5 cognitive senses, which we just defined. So what are these other 5 senses? Yoga calls them the 5 senses of action, 5 active senses. And they're defined in a really intriguing way, so we'll go through them in a little bit more detail. These 5 active senses are the sense of speech, physical manipulation, movement or locomotion, procreation, and elimination. So at first glance, it's a little hard to understand, how are these senses? I thought a sense was supposed to help me perceive the world. What yoga is trying to help us understand here is that perception is not a one-directional channel. Intrinsically, perception is about our relationship with the world. It's a bi-directional relationship. The 5 cognitive senses are clearly about information flowing in. When that information flows in terms of how we see, smell, taste, touch, and hear, we're spontaneously motivated to respond, to react, to digest that experience and then express it, to share it. That is intrinsic to our mind's unique capacity to perceive. The only way that we're able to express ourselves in this unique vessel that we call the human mind and human body is in these 5 ways of speech, physical manipulation through our hands, largely, movement, which is largely defined by the movement of our feet, procreation, and elimination. These are 5 ways that we engage with the world, 5 ways that we leave our mark on the world, 5 ways that we express whatever is within. And that expression is largely in response to what we perceive. Speech, manipulation, and movement are a little bit easier for us to understand because they're what we do. It's how we engage with the world. And it's amazing when you think about it, these 3 ways of action, speech, manipulation, and movement, probably constitutes the overwhelming majority of what we do in our waking state. That's something worth reflecting on in and of itself, that anything we can do to enhance the capacity of these senses will enrich probably 90% of our day. The other 2, procreation and elimination, are a little bit more unusual. But when we look at them, they are a direct extension of how we will leave an impact on the world. Our progeny, or anything where we see ourselves passed on, is one of the most profound ways of making a long-term impact on the world. And elimination is what I said is the 5th active sense. There might be a little bit of a broader way to frame that. I often like to call this 5th active sense consumption, because elimination is only the end result of a much broader process that we could really call consumption. Whatever we take in, we have to digest, assimilate, so that we can enjoy it, so we can nourish ourselves, so we can sustain ourselves. But there's always a byproduct of that process of consumption. That's elimination. When we consume mindfully, we are able to eliminate mindfully, and that elimination itself becomes a way that we can positively impact the world. When our consumption is not mindful, our elimination is not mindful, meaning we create waste in a way which is not sustainable, which is not healthy for us or for the world. So this is another way of looking at this 5th active sense, that just like we engage with the world in a very direct way through speech, movement, and manipulation, we have to think about how we pass ourselves on, procreation, and we have to think about how we consume so that we can survive, but do so in a way which is mindful and sustainable so that our elimination is also sustainable and reflects our inner desire. So these 5 active senses are how we leave our mark on the world, how we engage with the world. And together, these 10 senses, 5 active senses, and the 5 cognitive senses, are the totality of what of our mind's capacity to experience the world and engage with the world. The intriguing thing is that these senses are an integral part of the mind. It's very important to see a distinction between the sense and the sense organ. Our 5 cognitive senses are the best way to really look at this. Often, we think of our sense of sight, for instance, as our eyes, not realizing that our eyes and optic nerves are a sense organ. When we begin to look a bit deeper behind that sense organ, we realize that the sense organ itself is only an extension of a part of our brain that houses that unique cognitive capacity that we call sight. What yoga is talking about in terms of the cognitive senses is one step more subtle than that. It's not the part of our brain which enables the experience of sight. It's a subtle capacity of the mind which allows that part of the brain to create this capacity of sight. So part of what yoga is inspiring us to do is to cultivate a more and more subtle awareness of ourself. And working with the senses is a really important way of doing that. That we need to redefine our relationship with our senses so that they become more subtle. And when they become more subtle, we're able to unlock a greater power of our senses. Our sense of sight is far more than what our eyeball can contain. It's far more than what the part of our brain can contain. It's a unique capacity of the mind, which we call sight. The same is true with smelling, tasting, touching, and hearing. All of them have a respective sense organ and a respective part of our brain that empowers those organs to really sense, to feel. But the true power of the sense is a power of the mind. And when that power is allowed to blossom, our brain and our sense organs have exponentially more power to perceive and more power to engage with the world. That's really where we're going with the study of the senses in the context of citta, the mind. So these 10 senses are powers of perception and powers of engagement with the world, the cognitive senses and the active senses, respectively. All 10 senses are actually an extension of a capacity of the mind known as manas, which is often called the 11th sense or the master sense. Another way of defining manas is our everyday mind, our conscious mind. That aspect of our mind, which is an organizing principle, which allows all of these senses to bring information to a focal point and for all that information to be coherently organized. Otherwise, all that information would just be a huge jumble. So of course, in large part, this is what our brain does. Our brain is the seat of the manas. Let's be a little bit more precise. Perhaps the cortical brain, the conscious brain, the brain which is directly engaged with our experience of ourself and in the world in an everyday way, in terms of our senses. And we'll talk a little bit more because it's not a direct one-to-one correlation between the conscious mind and the manas, or between the cortical brain and the manas, but that's a great starting point. Our brain integrates all of these streams of raw information that our nervous system brings from our sense organs and integrates them. In a similar way, the manas integrates all of the streams of perception that flow in through the 5 cognitive senses and that are engaging with the world through our 5 active senses and brings them to a point of focus. It makes them coherent. That manas, though, is much more than an organizing principle, much more than a traffic cop. I call the manas the master sense. Really what this is telling us is that all 10 senses derive their power from the manas. They're an extension of the manas. The manas holds the capacity to directly sense. To make that more specific, more tangible, more concrete, the senses further elaborate on that sense, that master sense, and they express that master sense in these 10 unique ways, which we call the 10 senses. It's really something extraordinary to reflect on. You know, in the Western world, we talk about this this euphemism, the sixth sense. Here I'm calling it the 11th, because in the yogic scheme, there are 11 senses. But the idea is one and the same, that the mind has a capacity to directly sense something. And that's beyond what our normal everyday senses can do. There is a part of our mind that we can awaken by becoming consciously aware of the manas, which will allow us to sense the world directly. And that often takes the form of allowing these 10 senses to grow a little bit more vibrant, for them, for their experience to grow a little bit more rich. An expression of the master sense isn't always a quantum leap where it's a extrasensory perception. Our ability to perceive the world in a way that's more rich, more beautiful, more meaningful, more in focus, is an expression of the manas. And that capacity can either flow through the senses, or it can be something where it's directly engaging with the world. And that's where, when you look at even the physical depiction of this yogic anatomy of the mind, sometimes we like to draw the manas like a lens. It's our mind's eye to the world. It's how we see the world. When we're able to awaken a deeper potential of the manas, the world comes into view more clearly. It's like making sure that our mind's eye can see 20/20. The good thing is, we don't need to get a pair of glasses to do that. The practice of yoga allows us to retrain the senses and the manas, all 11 senses, so that they can see the world clearly. That is at the heart of so many yoga practices, to transform our relationship to our senses, to energize them, nourish them, and bring them into focus. The 10 senses and the manas are really the way that the citta engages with the world, and it's our gateway to begin seeing within.